God, boy, it is a pretty outrageous thought, to some just a preposterous thought, that the creator of the universe actually wants to talk with us. And that words that you gave are humankind, thousands and thousands of years ago, actually have something to do with our days today. But God, that's what we're here to learn about. That's what we're here to explore. So we ask that you would bring those words alive to us today. We might be able to understand a little bit better of who you are and who we are because of that. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. We're in this this series, Everything's Connected, where we're taking a look at the fact that we tend to fall into disconnected living. This thought that, you know, I can have these different segments in my life and I need to put on different masks and different uniforms throughout the day in order to exist in these different environments. So I have my home life, I have my work life, I have my social life, and I have my spiritual life. They're somehow, you know, kind of tagged on to that. And the fact that we build up these walls and we live in compartments because of that. Every once in a while, though, you know, I get a fresh reminder of just how connected my life is. Sometimes it's in a very, very practical way, you know, kind of a very obvious way. I had that just a couple of weeks ago here. I was walking downtown on the sidewalk across from Fountain Square, and somebody came up to me and they asked for money. And, you know, we all have this, and, you know, I've always felt this kind of constant tension at those moments. You know, your heart's really touched. You want to help this person, but you're like, well, am I enabling bad habits and bad behavior if I give them cash right now? You know, should I maybe direct them to one of our works that we have going on downtown to help them, or should I give them cash? And I found there's no clear answer. I just kind of have to ask for God's help in the moment. What do I do, you know, kind of in this moment? And it's something I've wrestled with for a long time. One thing that I did appreciate, though, I used to live in Berkeley, in California, and there, though, they made it a little bit easier because they got very creative in their pitches to you, you know, when they're asking for money. And I find that the creativity is just lacking, you know, in Cincinnati. My favorite one in Berkeley that I ever got was somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, can you spare a dollar? I'm trying to buy a ski mask and a handgun." And I thought, you know, there, you know, here's a dollar and here's five more for creativity. You know, I just, you know, I appreciate it. And then afterwards I thought, I hope he was kidding, because otherwise I just gave him $6, you know, but I had that happen, you know. And sometimes I end up giving money because I just feel like God wants me to give them money right there. Other times I say, hey, no, but let me tell you about, you know, the kind of this place you can go downtown that we're part of. But I had kind of a totally unique experience a couple of weeks ago where it went to kind of a whole nother level. I was downtown walking along by Fountain Square, and somebody came up to me and they said, "Hey, can you spare a dollar, Brian?" Whoa. The personal touch. And I was like, oh, man, you know, and I don't know, you know, if this guy had been to Crossroads before, or maybe that was his deal. You know, he picked a name and he just wrote it all day, and eventually he hit the jackpot, you know, sooner or later. I don't know, but he said, "Hey, can you spare a dollar, Brian?" I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, if I'm ever, you know, going to think that maybe this is God speaking to me to do something in this moment, you know, it's going to be right now. I reached into my pocket and I realized I had taken the bus downtown, and literally all I had on me was my bus fare to get home. That's all I had on me. So I felt, you know, kind of embarrassed here. This guy's, you know, knows my name and he's asking me for money. I said, you know, and I had to explain it. I said, "Hey, you know what? I took the bus down. All I have is my bus fare and that's it." And I could tell he kind of thought that I was giving him a line or something. You know, he kind of kept on walking. And now I wanted to convince him, you know, that no. And so he's walking away and I'm like, "No, really, all I have is my bus fare. If I was ever going to give somebody money calling me by name, you know, I would. Hey, next time I see you, I promise, you know, I promise I will, you know, or my name's not Brian Tome, you know, so you can bank on that." Every once in a while I have, you know, kind of these moments where I realize how much more life is connected, you know, than I think it is. And you may not have had something like that, but I can guarantee you our lives are entirely connected. And so much of the stress and the energy that we feel sucked out of our life is because we're trying to live disconnected lives. We're trying to be different people in different situations. And it's just not how we were designed to live. Now, one of the problems with this, one of the challenges with it, is there's been an entire industry created to kind of reinforce this in us. Entire industry created to reinforce the fact that we can have this segmented living. And it's called religion. It's called religion. And here's what religion does. Religion sells us this idea that there's this artificial separation between the sacred and the secular. that there are sacred things and sacred places, and then there are secular things and secular places. It tells us this artificial separation. So what tends to happen, not always, but tends to happen sometimes in religious places, the message is when we get together maybe once a week for our little spiritual pod in our life, we wear different clothes. We listen to different kinds of music than we do the rest of the week. We use different vocabulary than we do the rest of the week. And all of that is not inherently bad, except it can tend to reinforce this idea that I go somewhere to get my God fix, and that's different. I'm a different person there than I am in these other pods of my life. When in fact, the reality is, there is no such thing as a spiritual life. There is no such thing as your spiritual life. There is only life. There is only life. And our relationship with the Creator of the universe is part of our life. He doesn't want to be part of your spiritual life. He wants to be part of your life. And it's a message that we get throughout the Bible. One place there is, Jesus has been having a dialogue with someone, and one of the religious leaders of the day kind of overhears him and comes and asks him a question. He says, "Hey, Jesus, what is the most important commandment? You know, what's the most important thing that God has given us?" And here's how Jesus responds. It's within the Gospel of Mark in the New Testament of our Bible. "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's no commandment greater than these." And so Jesus responds to this question. He says, well, here's the deal. Here's the most important thing. Now hear this. God is one. God is not fragmented. God is one. And here's what he wants from you. He wants your spirituality in this. This is all that he wants. He just simply wants all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. You know, so Jesus says, here's what spirituality is. You know what falls outside of it? Nothing. Nothing. So the most important thing for you to know is that God is one and he wants you in your wholeness, in your entirety. The fact is, the message we get throughout the Bible is that we are not designed to live in pieces. And so much of our stress, so much of us feeling, even when our individual little pods of our life may be going fairly well at the moment, even in those times, we feel like something's been taken from us and we're not quite sure what it is. We feel like life's just, you know, kind of maybe a half bubble off even when it's going well. It's because we're trying to live compartmentalized living and we weren't designed for it. That's why this was such a big deal, that Jesus would point to this. And you probably noticed those words probably seemed a little bit familiar if you were paying attention a little bit earlier in the service. All Jesus was doing was he was reflecting back God's timeless words that he'd give the nation of Israel through Moses way before then. Jesus was actually quoting the Old Testament to that teacher at the time, right there from the book of Deuteronomy. And Deuteronomy is captured of God speaking through Moses to the nation of Israel. Deuteronomy 6, 4 and 5, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength." Jesus was obviously, he was just paraphrasing this ancient command. And it's what we looked at just a little earlier in the service. It's become known as the Shema. The Shema. And it's known as the Shema because Shema is just the first Hebrew word that's used in that command. Shema Israel. Hear Israel. Shema just means hear. It means listen up. So it's become known as the Shema. It's become known as the most sacred prayer in all of Judaism. It's the listen up prayer. It's the listen. It's the hear. It's the, if you hear nothing else, don't miss this. This is the most important thing, so you need to listen up. Hear, O Israel, God is one and he wants all of you. There's no such thing as a spiritual part of your life. There's only your life. And so the Shema became the defining creed of Judaism and down to today. Devout Jews still today will recite the Shema twice a day as God has commanded. You know, once in the morning and once in the evening. And it is the very first scripture that Jewish children are given to memorize all around the world. And there's a word within there. There's a word within the Shema. One of the Hebrew words that's in there, it's called, it's ahad. It means one. It's when it says that, you know, that God is one. And that's the, you know, that little label you got when you walked in here. That's what that is. That's the Hebrew word for one, Ehad. Or if you want to try to pretend like I do sometimes, like I can speak Hebrew, you know, you want to get your Hebrew on a little bit and say Ehad. You know, Ehad. This is Ehad. It means one. It means that God is one. And also the clear picture from this prayer is that God wants all of us. And so, the defining word from God was listen, listen, hear this, Shema, hear this, Israel. If you hear nothing else, hear this. And then, when Jesus is given a chance, when he's on earth, to say what's the most important thing, he refers back to those exact words. So you wonder, why is this so important? You know, why is this so important to God that if we hear nothing else, we hear this? Well, I think it's because of the reason that God created us. Now, you ever think about that? Why did God create humans? I think that's the defining reason for why the Shema is so important. The reason why God created us, okay, get ready, this is shock number one in the service, okay? The reason why God created us, you ready for the shock? Because he wants to be with us. Because he wants to be with us. God created us for no reason than he wants to be with us. So much so that names that he chooses for himself in the Bible have that as part of their definition. There's one name that's given for God in the Old Testament of the Bible that means God is near. And then when Jesus was on this earth, when love took on the form of flesh and came down here, the word that was used to describe him, Emmanuel, means God with us. That the reason why God created us is he wants to be with us. He doesn't want us to have some spiritual part of our life. He wants to share all of our life with us. And that's where we find oxygen, and that's where we find life. And you think about it, the thought, that's a pretty radical thought, that the creator of the universe wants to be with us. I mean that the greatest definition of greatness ever created each one of us because he wants to be with us. I mean, we're drawn to greatness, and you would think that this would inspire us, that greatness wants to be with us. Greatness has come close. We should do everything we can to be as close as we can. I mean, we like greatness. How many of you have ever had a brush with greatness? You know, some kind of celebrity encounter or something. You know, who has? Yeah, a lot of who was it? What's one of them?
Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis. All right. Yeah.
Muhammad Ali.
Ah, that's a good one. Yes. Bob Marley. All right, Bob Marley's the winner for the day. You get the centerpiece. You get although Muhammad Ali, that's a close set. Last night, what did we have? We had Ozzy Osbourne. That was, you know, kind of as good as it gets. How'd you mix it up with Bob Marley? And now, and remember, some laws are still in effect. You know, statute of limitations is not passed.
Bob Marley's house to meet Bob Marley in the band.
Oh, how cool is that? Of course, she was tutoring kids and ended up meeting Bob Marley. So, you know, wow, that's wild. Yeah, so you may want to check out Whiz Kids, because you never... I heard Peter Frampton drops in every now and then. No. Wow, that's incredible. Well, you know, I've had a few. And, you know, last weekend, gave everybody the choice. You know, remember, he gave everybody the choice of what order we would do the service in? You know, well, I'm not prepared to do that. But you did seem to dig that idea so much that I am prepared to at least do this, okay? I'm going to give you the choice of which one of my brushes with greatness I share with you, okay? I'll just kind of throw it out to you. So you have the choice between Van Halen, Quentin Tarantino and Steven Seagal, the lead singer of the 80s rock group Survivor, or, let's see, Nicolas Cage, okay? You know, who do you want to hear about? It's not clear. I'm hearing Van Halen. Do you want Van Halen? All right. Well, it's not a clear majority, but we'll go with Van Halen. Although, I'll warn you, it's not the most exciting story, but nonetheless, it's what you chose. 1977, I'm 12 years old. I still can't believe my parents let me do this. 12 years old, and I go to my first rock concert with my friends, Van Halen. As I remember, I had a group called Screams open for them, and the thing I remember most about the night is at the end of the night, the Screams drummer took his drum set and trashed it and then threw it out in the crowd. And I was like, yes, this is living. I am fully engaged living right now. This is great. Well, Bought the shirt, you know, it was the old, you know, kind of baseball jersey shirt, the black sleeves, the white Van Halen World Tour 1977. Bought the shirt. The next day, I'm wearing the shirt, and my best friend Sean comes riding up on his bicycle to my house breathlessly, and he says, Van Halen is in the parking lot at Kmart. What? What? The greatness has come down and shone on our neighborhood, and Van Halen has appeared. You know, wow. So jump on my bicycle, and we pedal like crazy to the parking lot of Kmart, you know, for this. You know, and we get there, and sure enough, they've got, you know, three semi-trucks with the VH on the side, and they're pulling some crates off and, like, rearranging them or something. And then there's the two tour buses there. I'm like, oh, and I got the shirt on. I had the shirt on from the night before. So we ride over there. You know, we're trying to wave to them and trying to get on the bus. And they wouldn't let us on, but Michael Anthony did come to the window and wave. You know, so that's... That was it. That's the story you chose. I heard a boo. I heard some booing. You know what? Brian's lesson last week was that you could choose all the order and everything, and however you chose, God would work it out. Well, obviously the lesson this week is you chose poorly, okay? So, didn't work out. That's what you got. I can just tell you personally, the one you should have chose was the lead singer of the 80s rock group Survivor. You know, and all I can tell you about that is that the subtitle of that story is me getting beat up by a topless groupie, okay? That's all I'll say. But you chose poorly, and now you'll never know, all right? Now, why? Why do I remember that so clearly? Why do I remember these? Because there's something about greatness. When we have a chance to be around greatness, we're just, you know, drawn to it in some way. And yet we hear this idea that the very definition of greatness, the creator of the universe wants to be with us. He wants to be with us. And how do we respond? We respond, wow, that's really cool. I'll take a little of that. I'll take that in measured doses. I'm interested in having a spiritual life as long as we can keep it contained and it doesn't get out of control. As long as we don't get radical about this. As long as it doesn't spill over into these other rooms. Because I'm scared if it spills over into these other rooms, it's going to mess up how I've decorated them. And the message that we get from Jesus, the message that we get throughout the Bible, there's no such thing as a spiritual life. There's only life. And so what it seems like we want to do is we want to, well, God wants to be near us. That's great. I want to be near him sometimes, but others, as a matter of fact, I'd rather just kind of hide from him. And we play this, you know, this kind of cosmic game of hide and seek. And it can be frustrating. And then we wonder why our lives feel like they're, you know, just kind of a half bubble off. I know any of you that have kids, you know that there's this stage in every kid's life where he discovers hide and seek, and it just seems like, wow, it's the most incredible game ever. This is fascinating. And when John was back when he's like 4 years old, remember he came home from preschool or something, and he had learned about hide and seek. So he wanted to play hide and seek, and he was infatuated with it. So we'd play nonstop hide and seek for hours and hours. He and I just one-on-one hide and seek. And it would go on forever. And it went on for about a month. You know, it just every day, you know, hours we'd play hide and seek. The thing that was interesting about it was he had kind of only gotten half the concept. So what he would do was he would always be the one that wanted to hide. I could never hide. He would always be the one that wanted to hide. But what he would do before I closed my eyes is he would take me to the part of the house where he was going to hide and then show me. And then he would take me back and then have me close my eyes and count. And then, you know, made for very short games. You know, like within 3 seconds, bam, got you, wow, you know. And it wasn't until years later, as I started being around some more mature parents, that I found out that what you're supposed to do in those situations is patronize the kid, you know, and pretend like you can't find him, you know. It's like, not in our house, buddy, you know. Wells's play for keeps. It was a lesson he needed to start learning very early, you know. And so that went on, and the poor kid was like 0-97, you know. It lost everyone. So finally, after about a month of this, I decided to clue him in. So I had to clue him in and say, hey, John, you know what the deal is, you know, with hide and seek is, you don't tell me where you're hiding. And I have to figure that out. I have to figure that out. And you saw these kind of lights go on in his eyes like, wow, this changes everything. You know, I may have a shot. Let's do it again. And, you know, he challenged me to a rematch. And so this time, you know, I closed my eyes. I counted. When I opened my eyes, I looked at the room, and laying across the room was a variety of his toys all laid in a row across the room, pointing. So there was like a tennis racket, and then there was a wiffle ball bat, and then at the very end there was his Buzz Lightyear figure pointing behind the chair to where he was standing. Couldn't quite figure out what he wanted. Did he want to hide? Did he want to be found or not? And I think we do that with God. We play this kind of cosmic game of hide and seek where, oh, maybe some strategic spirituality in my life, but let's not let this get out of control. John Ortberg describes it this way in one of his books. He says, it may be that out of all the prayers that are ever spoken, the most common one, the quietest one, the one that we least acknowledge making is simply this. Don't look at me, God. Don't look at me, God. And so we say, wow, yeah, spirituality gives me some warm fuzzies. I would like to understand, you know, God a little bit better. So God, you know, would you kind of reveal that to me? At the same time, I have a date Friday night. So Friday night, don't look at me, God. You know, I want to know what God's plan is for my life. You know, I want to feel the significance of knowing what His purpose is for my life. But I have this presentation in an hour, and I need to really nail this sale. I need to close the deal. So I'm going to need to massage the numbers a little bit. So just for right now, don't look at me, God. Or God, I want to feel Your blessing in my life, and I want to pursue what that means in my life. But I do have to do my taxes tomorrow. So just for right now, God, don't look at me, God. We're engaged in this kind of cosmic game of hide and seek, and we wonder why our lives feel like they're draining the energy out of us, trying to live this unnatural, disconnected, compartmentalized living. When in fact, we're not supposed to wear, while we may need to change clothes from one room to the next, we're not supposed to change faces. We're both supposed to be the same person pursuing God and feeling His presence throughout. And, you know, we've talked about this, you know, for a few weeks now. So, you know, part of you, if you're like me, you may be wondering, well, what do I do about this then? It seems like all of life is designed against living a connected life. What do I do? And I think there's a very practical answer for this. And it's the one we'll spend the rest of our time today on. Very practical answer. And you kind of got to get ready for shock number two, okay? Because the practical answer for disconnected living is prayer. It's prayer. Now that's shocking for a lot of us because you're like, I cannot believe he just used the word practical and prayer in the same sentence. Because a lot of us, we have this definition we've bought from religion of what prayer is. And so when we hear prayer, we can think of very few things that are less connected from our everyday life than prayer. We think of prayer as, I go to some sacred place and I'm very quiet and I close my eyes and I have this contemplative, meditative kind of experience. And it's not that those are bad things, and that's part of prayer. That's part of prayer. We need to do that sometimes, but we need to understand that if that's our definition of prayer, it is a very reductionary definition and understanding of prayer, and it's not the picture that God gives us in the Bible. So whatever that it is, whatever baggage you have when I bring up that word prayer, I want you to just realize I'm not using the word the way you do, okay? When I say prayer, think of a different word because we're not talking about that. What we're talking about is more along the lines of what the Apostle Paul writes about. In the New Testament, he's writing a letter of God's direction for this new church in northern Greece, area called Thessalonica. And there, in that letter, at one point, he gives them some advice. And one verse of it is just two words that he gives them. And here's what he says. Pray continually. Pray continually. Now we hear that, and I'm like, well, great. Now we're finally getting practically. Please, practical. Pray continually. Great. Now I have to be in this refined posture, having a silent conversation with my eyes closed with God 24/7. What could be more disconnected from regular life than that? But that's our religious baggage coming into this. Because what Paul was talking about here was this greater definition of prayer. This, you know, all this kind of unofficial prayer that we're called to do. And unofficial prayer, as it turns out, ends up being the more accurate description of what prayer is supposed to be with us. So what Paul was talking about was this silent conversation during the day where we're recognizing that God is one and greatness is everywhere, and we can feel His presence during the day and we can seek His guidance. And throughout the day, it's this natural rhythm. It's not this taking some time aside at different times. Maybe you want to do that, maybe not. But it's just as natural as breathing in and breathing out, we recognize God's presence and we seek His guidance. So for instance, for me right now, it's the fact that I'm having two conversations right now. I'm having one that you can hear that I'm having with you. And I'm having another one in my head that's just saying, God, would you please let me give your truth to everyone here today? And please don't let me fall into this thing of trying to look smart or trying to look good. Or it may be for you tomorrow morning taking a shower and just thanking God for hot water. It may be for you Tuesday morning, you're getting your son or you're getting your daughter ready for school. And as you're putting your daughter's sweater on, you're just saying, God, please help her just love learning today. It may be you making that presentation where you really do have to nail that deal. And you say, God, please help me nail this and help me do it with integrity. It may be you meeting your friend for happy hour after work and you know they have had a rough week and you just say, God, this is going to be awkward. I don't really know what to say. Would you please just give me some words of encouragement? It may be you just asking for patience when the hotel has lost your reservation. The fact is, unofficial prayer is what connects our life. Unofficial prayer is the thing that tears down these artificial barriers that we have in our life between these different environments we need to exist in. Because as we pass through every one, we know we are in the presence of greatness. We're in the presence of the Creator of the universe, and we can tap into that to recognize it and to ask for guidance. There was this 17th century monk who really connected with this and realized he needed to explode people's understanding of prayer, even way back in the 1600s, and I love the way he put it. He said, it's enormous self-deception to believe that the time of prayer must be different from any other. You know, the fact is, we will not get beyond the stress of disconnected living until we embrace a key fact. And that is, whatever your day is tomorrow, whatever your schedule is, whatever your life is these next 24 hours, it is perfectly situated for you to connect with God. Your life is perfectly situated for you to connect with God. I'm not saying that everything you're doing is exactly what God would have you do. I'm saying that your life is perfectly situated for connecting because He connects everywhere with people and right where you are. And that's why this was so important, that this became the Shema, this became the defining prayer that God gave, was that He's one, He's everywhere, He doesn't exist in pieces, and neither do we. So much so that God even gave them some very, you know, kind of practical ways to remember this during the rhythm of their life, as He knew they would be apt to forget this. So, you know, you look in Deuteronomy, just in those verses right after he's given this prayer that God is one and we're to love Him with all of who we are. Take a look at what it says. Right after that it says, now these commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road. When you lie down and when you get up, tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. And God was saying, I want to give you some practical ways just for this constant memory that I am one and that I am everywhere and I'm interested in all of you. I want to be with you. And so devout Jewish people will carry these commands out to this day. That when they're having their midweek morning prayers, they will take the Shema that has been written on a scroll, and they will scroll that up, and they will put it within a little leather pouch, and they will actually strap it to their forehead while they're saying their morning prayers. It's called a tefillin. Or they'll take that tefillin, and they'll strap it to their arm, as it says, to bind it on their arm, as a memory that God is constantly with them and that God is one. Or if you have friends that are Jewish, next time, many of them, maybe not all of them, but next time you go over to their house, just as you're walking through the doorway, you might want to look to the top right corner of the threshold of their doorway. And most likely what you'll find there is called a mezuzah case. And a mezuzah is the Shema that's been written out in an approved way on a scroll. It's been rolled up and put in this case. Sometimes they're ceramic or wooden or metal, and it has the word Shema written in Hebrew right on the cover of it. And they nail it to the upper right part of their doorway as you're coming in. And it's a constant reminder to them that God is one and God is interested in all their life. And the God of the universe is interested in their coming in and their going out. And many of them, whenever they pass through a doorway where there's a Shema, still to this day, they'll reach up with their two fingers and they'll touch it, and then they'll put their fingers to their lips. As a reminder that this God that is love is interested in all of their life. And so I thought, you know, what we could do today is maybe, you know, just as an illustration of how connected our lives are, we could connect with our imagination in this. Because God can use our imagination to teach us and to grow us as well as He can anything else. So I want to kind of engage our imagination a little bit. You got these labels when you came in. This is the word Ahad, which is one from the Shema, that God is one, and also an understanding that all of our lives are open to Him. If you would take it, you know, just kind of hold it in your hand. And if you want to go ahead and just close your eyes. Now this next part, I don't want you to feel any pressure to do. Feels weird for you, feels funky. You can be part of the rest of this without doing this. So, you know, choice is totally up to you. But I find it interesting how God had them fix this on their forearms and put it on their forehead just as this reminder of God's presence. And so for me during this time here, if you want, you know, just take this label off and just, I'm just going to put it on my forehead like they would at Tefillin. Or you may want to put it on your forehead, you may want to put it on your bicep. And with your eyes closed, you just imagine what a day of connected living might look and feel like. How it might be different. The definition of day in the Bible very consistently starts with the night before. There's evening and there's morning, the first day. And so your day, you know, tomorrow would start tonight. What this day might look like is the first thing is you might make a decision to get enough sleep, to go to bed at a time in which you could really bring all of you to the next 24 hours that God has for you. And as your head hits the pillow, it might just be a really quick thanking God for whatever good things happen to come your way today. And feeling His constant presence. And it might be right before you doze off, just asking the God that never sleeps to watch over you while you do. And asking this God to engage your imagination and actually to come into your dreams and use your dreams to encourage you and to inspire you. And the day might look like then waking up and feeling a little bit more rested than normal. Waking up and with your first breath, thanking God that you get to breathe another day. Recognizing the fact that thousands of people around the world took their last breath last night and you're not one of them. And it may be that you're a season in your life where waking up is a mixed bag. Because you wake up and you're immediately reminded how you are so tired of waking up by yourself. And your first conversation with God just might simply be, God, you know, I don't want to wake up alone anymore. So God, I need a little extra dose of you today. And God, would you please give me the courage and the discipline not to make bad choices out of loneliness? It may be for you that you found the best rhythm of your day. You bring your best when you're able to get a little exercise before the day goes on. So as your feet hit the floor getting out of the bed, you say, God, the last thing in the world I want to do is work out right now. But God, would you give me the discipline? Would you give me the strength and the health to be able to do that? And for some of us, our work is 100% engaged in the home. We're raising a family. We're helping run a household. And for you, your conversation with God as you move into that part of your day may be, God, would you please help me see your vision of these children in them? Help me see them as you want to grow them to be, not as they are right now with their temporary faults and their temporary challenges. Please help me see them for their potential of who you want them to be. And during the day, when the stakes kind of get raised in this, and they are just testing your patience beyond what you feel like you can take, you can just ask God, say, God, please give me the moment that I can just break away for a moment so that I don't lose my patience with these people you've entrusted to me. And for some of you, the day means your work means going to another place. And you go into an office or you go into a store. And as you're going in there, you're just having this second conversation, the silent conversation with God that says, God, please help me bring my best. Please help me be fully engaged in what I do for a living. And God, if I'm increasingly seeing that this job is not a right fit for me, please give me the discernment and the courage to find one that is so that I can bring my all. And then maybe during the day, you dropped a ball. You screwed up. Took a risk that maybe you shouldn't have. And you've got a hard meeting with your supervisor. And when you go in that meeting, you'll just be saying to God, God, would you please help me hear the truth in this conversation? Would you help me not be defensive? And would you help me be a little bit better at my job today than I was yesterday? And maybe you go to lunch. And lunch is just, you just have a 5-second moment where you say, God, thank you that I go somewhere and they bring food out for me. How rare is that in this world? God, thanks for that. And you may even at lunch say, God, please help me make the right choice so that I choose things to put in my body that will build it up instead of tearing it down. And you may move out of there into the dreaded 1 o'clock meeting. And it's the worst combination. It's a windowless conference room and a dull PowerPoint presentation. And your cry to God in that moment is, God, please help me stay awake. Although I warn you, you may have varying degrees of success of that depending on how you chose over lunch. If you went for the quarter pounder with cheese and large fries, you're probably on your own at this point. So God, help me stay engaged, help me stay awake. And then if the part of the meeting comes for your comments, you will say, God, would you please help me say things that are true and right and helpful? And if at any point I'm starting to say things just to impress other people or just to manage my image, would you help me hold my tongue? And as you move through the rest of the rhythm of your day, you just be saying, God, help show me when you've put divine interruptions in my day, even if they're not scheduled. And if at the end of the day you're going home to a family or to a roommate, in that transition space between your work and going home, you just say, God, would you help me be fully engaged when I get home? When their lips are moving, help me to be really listening. Or it may be that you're going home again to another empty apartment. And your choices for the evening mainly involve 112 different stations. And you say, God, would you please help me as I unwind tonight? Would you please help me if at any choice as I'm flipping this remote, if at any choice I'm forced to choose between being entertained and being healthy, I will choose health. And then at the end of the evening, as you complete the cycle and you put your head back down on that pillow and you feel that maybe it's just a little bit different of a day. Maybe it's just a little bit more connected than the day before. You could take those labels off. And you may want to take these labels. And this week you may want to think about what's that one area of your life that you find the greatest challenge that God is there and can help you in. And you may want to take this and put this as a reminder in that place just for one day. Maybe it's your day planner, maybe it's an alarm clock. Just as this reminder that we are not designed for disconnected living. And that the answer to this is that greatness wants to be with us and that we can experience Him throughout our day. Just as natural as we inhale and we exhale. That's what we're designed for.